That's a big week. Hey everybody, we're gonna close this thing out. Friday edition of the Damage Report with me, Johnny Arola. And as always, once again, Brett Ehrlich now broadcasting from a fancy cabin, I'm assuming.
When I got dressed this morning in the bedroom, I put on a t-shirt. When I walked over the threshold into this room, it turned into a flannel.
That makes sense. That's an upgrade you gotta have.
Yeah, so we've got a roaring fire, which we'll see if that becomes inappropriate eventually as the campiness of it exists in the background of very serious conversations.
That's true. I think it's okay. I don't think it's that bad. Well, I'm worried that once the video finally ends and YouTube takes you to the next video, what rabbit hole we're gonna go down.
Don't worry, I got 10 hours of this, John. Okay. The 10-hour fireplace. Though if I were uploading a 20-minute fireplace video followed by like 8 hours of really raunchy stuff, I would label it 10 hours of roaring fireplace.
You would. I wish that was what it was. Well, anyway, I have not seen your home. I like this room though. I'm very envious. I feel like this is where I should have been writing this whole time. As much as I like my hut, that looks like a place where one would type on a typewriter and get a book done. Thanks, need Tom a cigar Hanks. And a fancy scotch. I'm sure he has it, Ted Cruz. Don't even worry about that. But anyway, Brett, I'm glad to have you here because we got a lot that we're gonna be talking about. Some of it is even good news, I swear to God. A lot of it though is not, so you know, it's still America, everybody. But anyway, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button, sharing the stream, that would be great. And as we go through the next 90 minutes of content, if you would like to send us comments, tweets, super chats, all that, we'll respond as we go. And bear in mind that the show we're about to do is just the beginning of your Friday with TYT, because you've got Indisputable coming up right after the Damage Report. Dr. Rashad Ritchie joined by Jackson White, who was on the Damage Report just yesterday. Jason Lefkowitz is gonna be on for debate as well. So you can go to youtube.com/indisputable TYT or watch Twitch to see that. Galaxy Brain with Ben Carollo is coming up right after that. And then the power panel, I'm gonna be on with Cenk Uygur and Ray Vanna. JR is gonna join Cenk and Adrian Lawrence for the second hour. And then Brett, I hear there's something new.
So I'm not sure what I'm more excited about. Is it that I'm excited about Game Busters itself or the theme song for Game Busters?
Oh, I don't know what the theme song is.
Produced by Ariana Vega. It might be the most epic experience of anyone's life. Like, we might just have to loop it and dance for 2 hours or an hour and a half or however the hell long we go with this.
Well, I gotta hear this because our theme song has been mocked for years as just being My Sharona. Maybe we're gonna need to commission something from Ariana, but I have to listen to this and see what it is.
I think you might have to do that because there's a lot of, it is not Whipping My Tees Out Blue Lizard Guts. That's a different song by Ariana. Whipping My Tees Out on Video Chat. No, that's not that.
I've not heard that song.
Oh, it's so good. It is a banger. But this one is just so good. There's like I want to say Oingo Boingo style, like synth horn hits for those connoisseurs of 80s, like whatever kind of music that was. A lot of Dead Man's Party vibes. And I don't know what else to say about it other than there's a David Lee Roth inspired trill that I sing and
You're singing during it. Okay.
You could call it singing unless you knew what singing was supposed to sound like.
That's true. Okay, so I have a follow-up question about Game Busters because we have continued the tradition where everybody in the audience finds out about new shows exactly at the same time or before I ever do. So I had no idea this was coming. You're co-hosting it with Jordan Ewell.
So Jordan's gonna be running the stream. And for those of you who participated, and John, you participated in this too, the fundraiser that he did, where there's a lot of people are playing games, you can participate. You can also like subscribe and give bits to sabotage the games that we're gonna be playing. We're gonna try to play a different game every week. So John, we would definitely love for you to be part of it. It'll involve, you know, games that you probably have played or maybe dabbled in or been curious about that have been kind of making the rounds on the Twitcher sphere. Cool. And it's one of those things where if you are a gamer and you're interested in the latest games, like we'll be trying to play those. But if you're not, you can just hang out, watch, chat, and have a good time. So
that sounds like fun.
It's a lot of fun. And he'll have, and Jordan's really great about getting fantastic guests. So he's gonna be reaching out to some new faces and definitely hanging out with folks like you're accustomed to on Friday nights.
Awesome. Sounds like fun. And of course, adieu to Common Room.
You know, anything can come back.
It'll be back. I mean, it's come back multiple times. I'm sure it'll come back at some point. But anyway, Brooke says that we'd love to invite you so you can say no. Well, we'll see. I've been on before. But anyway, we do have a lot of news to get to. So a lot's coming and Sophie's about to quit. So we better move into the news soon. Let's do it. In the aftermath of the historic flooding in the Northeast, we now find out that at least 46 individuals have died in the flooding, far more than we knew about yesterday when we talked about it on the show. And we're reading now this morning that Joe Manchin is very concerned that you might be influenced by all these climate disasters to take climate change seriously, and he's not going to have it. So he has posted an op-ed with the Wall Street Journal saying he's ready for a pause now on all this infrastructure stuff, saying a pause is warranted because it will provide more clarity on the trajectory of the pandemic, and it will allow us to determine whether inflation is transitory or not. While some have suggested this reconciliation legislation must be passed now, I believe that making budgetary decisions under artificial political deadlines never leads to good policy or sound decisions. I have always said if I can't explain it, I can't vote for it, and I can't explain why my Democratic colleagues are rushing to spend $3.5 trillion. Well, he can't and doesn't explain any individual problem he has with the reconciliation bill, any of the spending other than the overall number, which we'll return to. Now, one would think he'd be able to explain that since the details have been available for months and months and months, and he's a goddamn senator with a crew that could ask questions of the people putting this together. Apparently, he's chosen not to do that. He's busy writing op-eds. He goes on to say, I, for one, won't support a $3.5 trillion bill or anywhere near that level of additional spending without greater clarity about why Congress chooses to ignore the serious effects inflation and debt have on existing government programs. Now, look, at the very least, he's been consistent on one thing. $3.5 trillion is way too much. From the very beginning, he's been calling, for instance, for up to $4 trillion in infrastructure spending. So that's weird. Nobody seems to remember that that's what it would have played if we'd brought up the graphic. But anyway, so he's been calling for $4 trillion. When Biden initially said how much he wanted, Manchin tried to like claim, no, actually he wants nothing. I'm the one who has like this big goals and everything. He got a good bit of a press out of that. And then ever since then, he's been running from it. And now I guess because we spent a couple of weeks not talking about Joe Manchin, Brett, all of a sudden he's got to try to throw a spanner into the works and maybe we'll get an infrastructure bill again and maybe we won't. Maybe he just wants us to interview him. Maybe he wants to add something to the bill. God only knows, but he's the president, so he gets whatever he wants.
Yeah, Joe Manchin is so infuriating because for these reasons, some which you mentioned, he has every opportunity to find out exactly what his colleagues are talking about. And his colleagues have been talking about it for a very long time. Rushing is not what's happening here. There is no rushing. And if he calls it an arbitrary political deadline, it's like, what are you talking about? There's an election coming up. And in the election's always coming up. When you look back on the Affordable Care Act, there was a very tiny window and everyone criticizes how long it took them to get that done. Mm-hmm. Because things won't happen unless there's a deadline. And his artificial political deadline is until then. His artificial political number is now $3.5 trillion, as it was reported by whoever this is. It looks like Insider. Senator Joe Manchin calls for up to $4 trillion in infrastructure spending. That's what he did. $4 trillion. He said it before. Mm-hmm. Is he lumping that in with the 1.8 or whatever it was $1 trillion spending package that was the bipartisan one?
But that's even smaller now. I mean, it's not that much.
It's $538 million in additional spending. I think it was that. So
it's almost exactly $4 trillion.
So if he goes in there, the thing with Joe Manchin, at the end of the day, he does this kind of thing to do some kind of personal branding back in West Virginia, and then frequently votes along with what people want him to vote on. And so if he does this, stomps and screams, but in his specific like fake folksy West Virginia way, which is like, I might be about to pass out as he does this, which makes it even more infuriating. And then he just shaves $35 million off of this. Or $1 billion off of this. Then and we go home. Everybody signs off on it. And his final number is $4 trillion. Fine, Joe Manchin. But what are you doing in the meantime? If you can't explain it, find a way to explain it. That's the other Joe Manchin thing is he knows that that line works back home. If I can't explain it, I won't vote for it. That's the destination. It's not doing stuff that helps West Virginians. It's maintaining his own personal brand so he can keep getting elected. And then maybe when this is all said and done and people have gotten infuriated with him rightly, to the point where he's like, I'm not gonna do this anymore. He stops being a senator and he goes to be a governor.
Yeah, maybe. Look, maybe we never know. You're 100% right. Sometimes he does end up doing what we would want him to do, and sometimes he doesn't. And the financial stakes and the climate stakes and the infrastructure stakes are so high that I don't want to just gamble. It would be cool if there was some pushback. I mean, there is some. We're gonna give you from progressives. I haven't heard anything from Biden yet. Maybe they're talking behind closed doors. That's one strategy. The former president tended to be a bit more public about it. Feel like the fact that Manchin is apparently saying, "Oh yeah, Biden, all your plans that you've been talking about, no, I'm single-handedly gonna stop those," feels like the president could respond to that in a public way. Because right now, like maybe he does it behind closed doors and maybe it even works. But there's no public cost to being willing to say, I'm going to tank my entire party's agenda. There's no cost to that. He just does it. He gets coverage. Basically, nobody that the powerful care about is going to criticize him. It's frustrating. So right. Look, sorry, what were you going to say?
I forget. Yeah. Yeah, AOC has the best take on this, and I see that you have it. So,
yes. Okay, so why don't we go into that? Well, first of all, the communications director for Sunrise Movement, Ellen Scalise, says she responded with just abolish the Senate. That was the entirety of her thing. Yeah, look, it fundamentally changed the Senate. The country is not split 50-50, so why is the Senate 50-50, leaving a goon like him to be able to determine if anything happens or not, based on whether he feels like it or not?
I'd say reestablish the Senate. Reborn, like whatever it is, what are they called? Born again Senate. Let's do a born again Senate.
Yeah.
Where we go back to the original way the Senate was set up, where you don't have a filibuster. Like you don't.
We still have popular election of senators.
And you'd still have popular election of Senate. No, you couldn't have that. It would still be the state legislature. So it's got 1817 hybrid. Let's do that. Yeah. 1917-1817 hybrid of those two.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to give you a response of some others, including Jamal Bowman, who said, "Hey Joe, these are the homes in my district after last night's storm. How much destruction do we need to see before it's worth investing in our climate?" I don't know. My dumb, naive, knee-jerk reaction is, well, he's not seeing it in West Virginia, but then I realize I don't think he'd care. They blow the tops off mountains in West Virginia. I don't think he cares about environmental devastation even close to home. And why am I referring to West Virginia as his home, as if he ever goes there, as if he gives a damn about anything that happens in that state? But anyway, Jamal Bowman is right. A lot of people just lost their lives. By the way, AOC pointed out on Twitter that the subway stations and other infrastructure that was rebuilt post Hurricane Sandy, that was designed to be more resilient to flooding like this, a cause exacerbated by climate change, didn't fail in the same way. It was the older, non-upgraded infrastructure that was more likely to fail. Again, pointing out not only that we need to deal with climate change, but infrastructure is an integral part of it.
Yeah, there's this, she's explaining it to him. He wants the answers, thanks for the question. Let's explain it to him.
Yeah.
So there just needs to be a quick explainer of what's going on. And the explainer will be the text of this budget. And he's gonna say, I can't read it, it's so long. Well, then someone give him a bullet by bullet explanation of what's in it. And those are the exact things. And also, these kinds of investments in energy will still power West Virginia workers. Yeah. And these kinds of infrastructure investments are the things that get to exactly keeping those people in employment. Yeah. It'll fund systems that put them to work.
Yeah.
It worked before, it will work again.
Let's give a little bit more from AOC. Maybe that'll put me in a better mood. She says, and by the way, and I try to point out when she does specifically call out, and she loves calling out Joe Manchin in particular, says Manchin has weekly huddles with Exxon and is one of many senators who gives lobbyists their pen to write so-called bipartisan fossil fuel bills. It's killing people, our people, at least 12 last night, sick of this bipartisan corruption that masquerades as clear-eyed moderation. And she points out that they can hit the cancel button on this so-called bipartisan charade of an Exxon lobbyist drafted infrastructure bill, unless we actually pass a law that helps people's lives with healthcare expansion, childcare, climate action, etc. Pointing out that this does go both ways. They can kill, the progressives can kill both bills too. Although I will point out again, as I have from the very beginning, it is not exactly equal because one side cares way, way more if anything ever happens. Joe Manchin's not gonna cry himself to sleep in his mansion if they don't get the bipartisan bill in addition to the reconciliation one. So again, it's asymmetric warfare. Now anyway, I wanna move on to another issue here. And that is that, look, we luckily have people like AOC who are doing Instagram lives, telling people about the intersection of climate change, infrastructure, these sorts of policies, our obligation to do something. The right has their own version. Let's jump into this. Greg Gutfeld, like sitting in a studio right where all the flooding is happening, isn't exactly buying this climate change thing. Let's watch this video.
Whenever you actually kind of push at the climate change, the claims they make, ask for data, it's never there. So they always say it's an increase in weather events without ever saying the severity of it, which goes to your point about deaths, right? So the severity has been on the decline. And we've been starting to keeping track of this. Maybe it's been over a half a century, not quite, but the amount of death has been a decline.
Okay, so yeah, there's no data. It's 2021. Like, I stupidly, again, naively thought that we'd kind of move past this, that we were just in the, well, okay, sure, it's happening. And okay, I guess I admit we caused it, but I don't want to do anything about it. It's so expensive, it's so difficult. No, sometimes they just play the hits. We still don't even know if it's happening. Record-breaking flooding constantly. Everything's on fire that's not flooded. Soon, both. They're fire-nados after all. Why not fire typhoons? But yeah, there's no data. There's just nothing. I mean, ironically, 2 days ago, a UN agency, or actually the reporting from it is coming out. Yeah, 2 days ago, a UN agency said, they put out this report saying the number of disasters such as floods and heat waves driven by climate change have increased fivefold over the past half century, killing more than 2 million people and costing $3.64 trillion in total losses. The costs from those events have surged from $175 billion in the 1970s to $1.38 trillion in the 2010s when storms like Harvey, Maria, and Irma ripped through the United States. But why should he have any idea of what had just recently been reported before he goes off on his stupid rants? Now look, in some cases, there have been fewer deaths, partially because we are taking these more seriously. And thankfully, there have been regulations that have made buildings, for instance, better able to weather storms, hurricane proofed, and all of that. Although again, as always, I will point out that he's hiding behind these sorts of regulations to say we don't need to do anything when he's the sort of pundit that never would have supported those regulations in the first place. And so there's a double layer of irony. And I will just point out, he then goes off on this thing about how we need to all study the work of Bjorn Lomborg, who's not respected enough. He's a climate skeptic. First of all, he's not even really a climate skeptic. He says it's happening. He just, like Greg Gutfeld, says there's no point in trying to do anything about it. But notably, his most important work, which is about 20 years ago, was investigated by the DCSD. They did a ruling back in January of 2003, finding that the claims that he had misrepresented the science were totally true. He had totally misrepresented the science in his big work, but he can't really be held responsible because he has no expertise in any of this material anyway. So how could we expect him to know what he was talking about? That's the expert that Greg Gutfeld went on to cite. Although what I just said is probably more actual information he has than he has about this guy and his actual work. Anyway, Brett, I apologize. The entire thing is very frustrating. We've getting all this evidence is being shoved in our face, wet in the one hand, fire in the other, and no, we're not going to learn anything.
That sounded so gross.
Noted.
Yeah, Greg Gutfeld is, believe it or not, not the most, the foremost expert on climate science. He is and he's there doing an impression of what he's a comedian, right? So he's going to adapt to whatever the audience is reacting positively to. That's what you do. You have this instinct about what you think is good. You go tell the jokes. You do more of what people laugh at and less of what people don't laugh at. And in this situation, it's that particular kind of Fox laughter that is the reason that they like Gutfeld in the first place. He looks like the cartoon guy in Pinocchio that turns into a donkey.
I knew that's who you were gonna say.
And when you're picking people to be on shows in this Trump world of central casting, that's why you gravitate toward Gutfeld. He looks like that little kid. He looks like someone's little brother who got beat up and then grew up and just like started buying suits. And now he's a little cartoon brat in a suit who just says whatever. He's the jester that they bring in at Fox News to tell the jokes so that everybody can throw tomatoes at something.
Yeah.
So he's not the place to go to. And he's killing it, by the way. He's getting great ratings over there because they're really leaning into what Fox represents itself as, not in the commercials, not in the advertisements or the promotion or day-to-day experience a viewer would have while watching Fox News. Yeah. They're leaning into what Fox does when they get sued for misinformation, for being derelict in their duty as a news network, which is, this is all just entertainment. They got a freaking late night show on a news network where people come in and they tell stupid jokes. And most of them are failed pundits and failed comedians who show up there just because they're getting this awesome opportunity to, after they get no laughs anywhere where people are reacting in a club, they go there and they get the kind of positive reinforcement and acceptance as legit that you get by just being on a set with that expensive a lighting setup.
Sure. Yeah. I can't believe it. Remember when that show came out? We showed some clips from it. It is god awful.
All those shows always get better, though.
Yeah, I'm
sure. You don't want them to, but they do. They get better because they figure it out. They figure out what's working and what's not. Yeah.
Let's live review an episode of Gutfeld, because here's the thing. His show might be new. He's not. He's been on there for years and years and years. He's terrible. I think Kilmeade's funnier, honestly, on a regular basis. Maybe not.
I think he's funnier. I mean, he's funny. He's got, you know, there's funny people and there's not funny people. Like, he knows how to be funny, but the thing is that smirk is 50% I believe in this and 90%, and yes, that's more than 100% just because he's so extra. It's 90% I can't believe I figured out this gig.
Yeah. Well,
because I've talked to comedians who hung out with that guy and said, like, yeah, he talks crap about Trump. And he likes to, you know, he says Trump's fun to hang out with, but he thinks he's an idiot.
Yeah.
And then he turns around and is like, yeah, I know what I gotta say to get paid.
Got it. We gotta take our first break. When we come back, though, we will be talking about COVID. There's a new variant going around. We're gonna get an idea of how worried you should be. And Tucker Carlson stands up for those breaking the law for no reason whatsoever after this. Okay, Brett, time to go back to annoying each other. Not that I need
challenge
to remind
accepted.
You. Okay, let's do this.
Whenever you're ready, just go ahead and start the story.
See, I liked the old pattern where the intros were relatively smooth, but it was impossible to go to break. Now we've got a book coming and going. Anyway, this is serious. Most people are just now getting used to the Delta variant, which has swept across America, but you might have been hearing of the Mu variant. What is that? We're gonna give you the details. But at least as of right now, the experts seem to be indicating it isn't something you need to be immediately really worried about. Here is Dr. Fauci.
We certainly are aware of the Mu variant. We're keeping a very close eye on it. It is really seen here, but it is not at all even close to being dominant. As you know, the Delta is more than 99% dominant. Even though it is not, in the essence, taken hold to any extent here, we always pay attention to, at all times, variants. This variant has a constellation of mutations that suggests that it would evade certain antibodies, not only monoclonal antibodies, but vaccine and convalescent serum-induced antibodies. But there isn't a lot of clinical data to suggest that. It is mostly laboratory in vitro data. Not to downplay it, we take it very seriously. But remember, even when you have variants that do diminish somewhat the efficacy of a vaccine, the vaccines still are quite effective against variants of that type. Bottom line, we're paying attention to it. We take everything like that seriously, but we don't consider it an immediate threat right now.
Okay, so I'm gonna give you more information about the origin and spread of the Mu variant, but Brett, there was some mixed information there. Of course, look, he's saying there is reason to believe that it might be able to evade some of the antibodies, but so far, we don't have a lot of like in the field evidence of that, and you might still be kind of protected, and it isn't very common. So what do you think?
I think the big takeaway that a lot of people would probably have when watching or reading a story like this is, oh my God, we're at Mu. It's like when you look up the what letter we're on in the hurricane alphabet, and you're just like, oh, Mu looks like an M. It's in the middle somewhere. I don't even know. They probably have even more Greek letters than American letters. So I'm out. But really, at the end of it, it's like I'm scared of the Mu. And I everyone has already by this point chosen, for the most part, their approach to guidance from the CDC and how much they take it to heart. And for me, someone who has taken it to heart and is, you know, just like any other developing science, as new things emerge, you kind of feel that over time it gets more and more concrete. And that seems to be the same vibe that the guy in charge of science here does. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm still going to follow the same COVID protocols that I've been following, which are probably a little bit more stringent than other people have. And I know that's just because of a luxury of being able to work remotely and everything like that. But I'm still going to be as careful when I go into a grocery store. I'm still going to give really horrible looks to the woman in El Pollo Loco who wasn't wearing a mask, even though we have a mask mandate and it's in front of her face because she's trying to be cute. But that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I think that largely you're right. I think that most people's response is pretty baked in at this point. But let's acknowledge, as we have been, that vaccination rates have been rising as a result of Delta, at least the effect of Delta, if not the news coverage and more information we've gotten of the Delta variant. So some people do seem to be able to be influenced, even if belatedly and far too few. But let me catch up on Mu so far. It was designated by the WHO as a variant of interest earlier this week and was going to be monitored by the global health body as cases continue to emerge. It is the fifth variant that the WHO is monitoring. The CDC has not yet elevated it to that level, probably because so far a lot of it is international. We will see if, as it spreads in the United States more, if it might get elevated. The first variant was first detected back in January of this year in Colombia, where cases continue to rise. Since then, it's been found in more than 39 countries. Why not just say how many? If you're gonna be that specific, is it 40? Is it 41? I don't know why they do that.
There's but anyway, only 39 countries.
That's true. Yeah, I think there are roughly 39 countries in the world.
More than John. I was gonna just gloss over that until you point out. Now it's the most frustrating thing in the universe to me.
Is it more than 40 or isn't it? Because that at least seems like you're rounding.
Is there like which? Which Sudan are they like separating them now? Or like, is it,
do they mean like 39 countries and a city state?
Are you thinking, yeah, is it like the Vatican?
Like, is North Korea fine? Disputed regions, unmapped territories? Is this a fractional country? Fauci.
Oh my God.
What do you
I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight, John, not because of the Mu variant, but because of more than 39 countries. I'm going to call.
Yeah, someone's like Nepal. Yeah, maybe.
Calling up Adela Suleiman and asking for the Washington Post.
Anyway,
explain.
Jesus. As of Sunday, the global prevalence of the Mu variant appears to be less than 0.1%. But in South America, it has consistently increased, now making up 39% of the cases in Colombia and 13% of the cases in Ecuador. About 2,000 Mu cases have been found in the US in states, you know, as broad as California, Florida, Texas, and New York, where you would expect basically any new variant is going to enter the country. Pfizer has said that they are studying the Mu variant and expected to share data soon with a peer-reviewed journal. They say as of right now, they are very confident about the vaccine's ability to fight it off, but they do also sell that vaccine. So not exactly unbiased. But anyway, as of right now, that's the information we have. Perhaps in a few months, it'll be ruining our lives. But right now, it doesn't look like a total catastrophe. But anyway, why don't we jump into this? Oh, sorry, just the video. My bad.
Buying a fake vaccination card is not a quote serious crime. It's not even close to a serious crime. Buying a fake vaccination card is an act of desperation by decent law-abiding Americans who have been forced into a corner by tyrants. You know what's a serious crime? Forcing Americans to take drugs they don't need or want. That's a very serious crime. And let's hope in the end, someone is punished for it severely.
Okay, so I don't know what the severe, I don't know, like jail for the rest of their lives. Is he trying to hint at the death penalty? I mean, look, maybe not, but he knows his audience. What like if he was to do a poll, should Dr. Fauci be executed over what he's done during the pandemic? What do you think the responses would be? But anyway, there he is talking about the people who are pretending to be vaccinated when they are not, so that they can enter types of buildings, businesses, perhaps even states. For instance, we talked earlier this week about a woman who faked her Moderna vaccine so that she could go into Hawaii, a state that is desperately trying to stop the importation of COVID. But they are law abiding even as they break the law. That's the trick that he plays. Whereas people who are trying to stop the spread of a deadly disease, they are the ones that are actually transgressing. And in fact, so badly that there are tyrants. Tyrants who want people to take a free vaccine. Again, Brett, like it's a shot that takes like 10 seconds. That's what it is. And it's free. And the side effects are very, like I cannot believe that still we're like spending all of our time trying to get through when, and he's got, you know, a billion times the reach, millions of people will accept every single word that he says. And yeah, so these people who are just selling, they're selling these for $250 a pop so they can make money. That's the entire reason they're doing it. He takes that criminal behavior and turns it into some sort of patriotic stance.
This is the absolute most embarrassingly terrible argument that Tucker Carlson has ever made. His argument is you don't gotta follow laws you don't like. Mm-hmm. Fine. Is that a world you wanna live? I thought you were rule of law, but apparently we're not. So I'm not going to follow any of the laws I don't like. And then also, he is now, so then the other thing that is people would be, this is fraud. You would buy a fake vaccine card to commit fraud. Now, what is the intent by having vaccine cards? The intent of having vaccine cards is to make sure that people aren't killing other people through some kind of bioweapon known as COVID-19, right? So there is a virus that these people with fake vaccine cards, they bought knowingly, are then smuggling viruses potentially. The whole mechanism is for them to smuggle viruses into places where other people are to spread that virus. That's why they did it. So that murder is less serious to him than making sure people don't murder.
Yep.
Because that's what his audience wants to hear. It doesn't make any sense. Which is it, man? He picks any side of any story because 600,000 Americans have died. You know, 500, I don't even know what the number is now. Over 500,000 Americans have died from this. We're trying to fix it. It is a foreign invader. Let's call it that so your stupid audience will get behind it. Mm-hmm. This foreign invader is infiltrating our society, and we are trying to stop this immigrant virus from killing more people. And if our new Texas law means that we can sue for damages anyone who facilitates something we don't agree with that is enshrined in law now, well, anyone who is passing the virus around knowingly through fraud, I should be able to sue them for a whole mm-hmm. grip of money.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, ugh. Yeah. Well, we should set up a bounty. You know, if you believe that someone is faking their vaccination card, you can get $10,000. Yeah, we're back up to an average of over 1,500 people dying every day. I'm not an expert. We can ask Brooke, what is that, like 5 to 10 planes crashing every single day full of Americans needlessly dying? And he is worried that people have to get a vaccine. And again, he isn't like, it would be one thing if we were fighting, like if I wish we could go back to like arguing against Alex Jones, because at least he believed what he was saying. It was crazy, but he believed it. Tucker Carlson doesn't give a damn about any of this. He's vaccinated and he doesn't care. He doesn't actually consider it to be tyranny. He just knows what his audience believes and wants to hear.
He's an elitist speech and debate stooge doing this as an extracurricular. If you don't know what speech and debate is, I didn't either until I saw a documentary on it, where it's a bunch of morons who go out, or it's a bunch of elitist pleated pant, Oxford shirt wearing D-bags who try to get into college by having this extracurricular where you just, I think what you do is you just kind of pick any position and argue for it. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to be able to take both sides. And he does that throughout. So here's his argument is against having religious cake companies refuse to make gay cakes. Mm-hmm. Like,
that's the reason mandating, you can refuse to let someone in, but not yes. this. Yeah, and again, like,
so stupid.
Pointing out the hypocrisy doesn't matter because they don't care. They don't not want to be hypocritical. They want to get what they want. That's it. There's no consistency because consistency is drawn from something deeper, and there's nothing deeper than wanting to have their way. Whatever their way is, however it comes to their head, maybe Tucker gives it to them. Maybe it's based on something that happened to them as kids. They don't know, they just want it. And that's it, that's as deep as it goes. So we feel all of these stupid, pointless needs to point out inaccuracies and hypocrisies, and we're gonna continue doing it. We got a little bit more Tucker Carlson coming up later. With just obvious lies. But again, they don't care because they don't care about being consistent. They don't care about being accurate. They don't care if what they say actually reflects reality. They fundamentally don't care. And they certainly don't care if they get other people sick and those people die. Now, let's take our second break. And when we come back, a little bit of old school political corruption. How can you take donor money and turn it into your money after this? No Fridays. Okay, let's jump into something completely different. How have the business interests of Donald Trump been holding up? Sort of the core thing that he does is rent out and sell apartments basically in Trump Tower. They don't do as much of the licensing of his name anymore. They certainly don't build anything, but they do sell and rent real estate. Well, apparently, not doing too well, although they have found a bit of a way to make some money, and wait until you find out whose money it is that they're actually making. So starting in March, one of Trump's committees, Make America Great Again PAC, paid $37,541 per month to rent office space on the 15th floor of Trump Tower, a space previously rented by his campaign, according to campaign finance filings and a person familiar with the political action committee. Bear in mind, of course, that like, he's not actively running for anything. He's just maintaining these PACs. They're raising money, and then the money is being spent on things like real estate that he owns, which is amazing. The rate that they're paying is about $85 per square foot. It's close to the average for Midtown Manhattan, though it's less than the $122 per square foot that Trump got from Mark Fisher Footwear, who is like some others, former tenants of his. Now, many of those have apparently gone out of business or moved out of the building, opening up more space for him to potentially rent to himself. But what makes it even worse is it's not just that like they've decided to use his building rather than some other building. It's that they've also just rented out way more room than they actually have any need for so that they can spend more money on it. Under typical office conditions, with about one worker per 175 square feet, the space that he's rented in Trump Tower might hold 30 people. But according to the latest filings, just three people actually are listed at that address. Those three don't even always work there, according to a person familiar with the PAC. They work from home or follow Trump around the country to places like Palm Beach and Bedminster, New Jersey. Also, for several months, Trump's PAC paid the Trump Organization $3,000 per month to rent a retail kiosk in the tower's lobby, even though the lobby was closed, which makes that sort of a weird bit of spending. Oops, $3,000 that were donated to his PAC suddenly became his money. And supposedly, all of this is legal. There's actually nothing in campaign finance law that stops him from spending that much or potentially significantly more and just turning donations into his money. It's an amazing con if you can maintain it. And apparently he can, even when he's not in office.
What this is the dirtiest money laundering scheme I've ever seen. It's so lazy. And the worst part is it's, I guess it's technically legal. And to make matters worse than that, like they're fine with it. People who donated to Trump, it's like the prosperity gospel. They just give the money to him. And what's weird is it kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. That's not exactly that, but people think Trump is rich because he's such a great businessman and he knows how to negotiate deals and do all this stuff. No, he just said that about himself and then was able to convince people. I've been watching like Sex in the City and The Sopranos, and all they do is references to Trump. Like they talk about Trump all the time. You'll be listening to like 90s hip hop and they'll mention Donald Trump all the time. Not because he was, at that time, he was going through bankruptcies at that very moment. It was before The Apprentice came on, or maybe at the beginning that rebooted him. And even that was him telling you that he's successful and telling you that he's great at all this stuff. So people give him money. That's how he gets good at it. That's how he gets rich, is because he's convinced you he's rich and you give him more money for it. And it all goes right into his pocket. It's sick, but it's brilliant.
It is brilliant. It is brilliant. And I think that you're fundamentally right. Now, I don't think all of them necessarily would be fine with the spending, but I think the vast majority, I mean, they barely cared. Remember those stories we were talking about over the last year that he's still doing? When he signs people up to automatically have money deducted from their accounts and it's all like in small print and everything, they barely cared about that. That's like robbery. It's this, Trump is never going to take a plane to your house, kick down your door and steal your valuables, your whatever, your china. Like this is as close to robbery as he is willing to get and interested in getting. And they're pretty much fine with that. They're pretty much fine with that. So look, this to me isn't an issue for Trump, obviously. And it's not an issue, honestly, that really affects the vast majority of the people that watch this show because they're not gonna give money to him. It's not like they're being conned. But I will throw it out there as evidence piece number 5,000 that we need to fundamentally change campaign finance laws. Whether something like this is morally right or whatever, or whether his fans like it, I don't care. It shouldn't be allowed. You should not be able to set up schemes like this to enrich yourself via your donors. If they want to send checks to Trump himself, they can do that and he can pay taxes on it. Anyway.
It's just, it's like a mega church. That's it. Yeah. And they get high off of this feeling of being part of this larger power, which is Donald Trump, who, by the way, isn't holding church every Sunday anymore. He isn't even doing that. Like he's basically, if a mega church pastor was able to get away with maybe like holding a sermon once every 6 weeks.
Sure.
But people are still chucking money on it. And it's also, it kind of graduates into like this Jesus prospect because they want him to come again. And it builds into that narrative like Christ is risen. Mm-hmm. Trump will come again, which is even grosser given his sexual assault charges and accusations. Is.
That could have been a very smooth transition to the next topic. Instead, it went down a different avenue. But you know what? We're going to push ahead. Let's jump into this. Lauren Windsor making news once again. The undercurrent is back, and I didn't see it coming. So what am I talking about here? Well, you might have seen reporting that Jim Jordan apparently is in Ohio, and he was quoted as having talked to someone and saying that Trump is going to come to Ohio or whatever, and he's going to announce any day that he's running for president again. He didn't say whether he himself was considering run for the presidency. I didn't even know that Jim Jordan was a person that we think is going to try to. Do they even like him that much? But he said Trump is close to making a decision, saying I talked to him yesterday. That was what was reported. Now, right after all of that information came out, a spokesperson for Representative Jim Jordan denied the reporter's claim that he was talking about Trump. They said not true. Mr. Jordan did not say this. But I guess what they didn't know is that Lauren Windsor had already been there, and she actually had a little conversation with Jim Jordan herself. So let's go to this video.
President Trump, he's going to run again.
You think so?
I know so.
Okay.
I talked to him yesterday. He's about ready to announce after all this craziness in Afghanistan.
Thank God. Yeah, yeah, like inviting him. Yeah, part of my friend. Kind of.
Yeah, he said he's really bad.
Okay, well, I would know.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, so look, I had seen this story going around, and honestly, I was only kind of interested in it. But then when I saw that it was her, and I was like, we got to talk about this. How is she everywhere talking to everyone on the ground? And is she gradually losing her mind having to pretend that she's a MAGA girl all day long?
Well, if you ask how she's able to get that close, the literal answer is just a hat, it seems.
That's really all it takes is you wear the hat, and they have no ability to discern.
Is it, if it's bright red or has camo, then you can just walk by, like go head to a Bass Pro Shop, snag a hat and or a MAGA hat, and then you'll do it.
Or a gun. You'd probably be good with a gun. But anyway, so look, the spokesperson just, I guess they don't care, but looks like an idiot denying it when the video had already been taken at that point. But anyway, I guess, look, so first of all, continued good work by Lauren Windsor. Like most of these viral stories, she ends up being involved in some way. The show is The Undercurrent, so definitely go check that out. You should follow Lauren Windsor on Twitter. On the other side of it, hold on to your butts, because apparently this is coming soon, according to her reporting. And Jim Jordan is apparently going around talking to everyone about how this is going to come soon. So prepare yourself, because I guess he's getting ready to announce.
So here's
in advance.
And listening to that statement, it is amazing. Everything about it looks horrible for Jim Jordan, because either he's spilling the beans early and is accurately doing so. Or he's just trying to seem cool, like he knows Trump, like he's with him all the time. I talked to him today. Did you talk to him on January 6th? I can't remember. I don't know. What about those kids in the bathroom and the sexual assault? But I talked to him yesterday and we're best buds, and he's going to announce that he's running. But I think the first case and the second case, those are both equally horrible for Jim Jordan, because if he got out in front of this and said that Trump is about ready to announce, which he said that, and if it's true, then he got in the way of Trump doing that. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know. If I'm Trump, there's two factors that feed into this. One, the first factor is what will get people to talk about me the most at any given moment of breathing human life. And this is fine. So that plays into people talking about it. And two, I'm definitely running for president. When should I announce my second run for president as a function of like whether it will allow me to raise more money that I will then launder through my properties and put in my pocket?
Yeah.
Because if people would stop talking to him for a second, but it would cost him money, then I think he would, let it lie or whatever. But I think those are the two factors that he's taken into consideration.
Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for this first hour. So if you're on Twitch or YouTube, we got more news coming. We got a quick break, but we'll be back in just a few. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.